Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1970 that farmer Max Yeager was sued for $35,000 by his neighboring farmers for what? Was it A, growing marijuana for distribution at concerts? Was it B, damages caused by a music festival held on his property? Was it C, noise pollution from his loud music during the milking of his dairy cows? Or was it D, flooding caused by improper drainage from the huge piles of discarded musical instruments he amassed on his property? 1970? Why was that farmer sued by his neighbors? And question number two. It was on this day, back in 1993, that an Elvis Presley commemorative stamp was debuted by the U.S. Postal Service. The 29-cent stamp showed what? Was it A, a likeness of the 1950s-era Elvis? Was it B, a picture of Elvis's pink Cadillac? Was it C, a likeness of the 1970s-era Elvis? Or was it D, a picture of Elvis's home, Graceland? 1993 commemorative stamp. What did it feature? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of January the 7th. Well, it was on this day back in 1924 that George Gershwin completed Rhapsody in Blue at the age of 26, 1924 today. And it was only 67 years ago today, 1955, that Marian Anderson became the first African-American to sing at New York's Metropolitan Opera. 1955 today.
Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping. With folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5.
Dolly Parton's 9 to 5 introduces our country music news. It's entitled Dolly Parton Sets 3 Guinness World Records. This is written by Miguel A. Melendez. Entertainment Tonight on the 18th of December 2021. Dolly Parton is a gal of many talents. She's now the proud holder of not one, not two, but 3 Guinness World Records. The 75-year-old country star broke the records for most decades, 7. Most number one hits, 25 on the Billboard U.S. Hot country songs chart for a female artist. And she also broke one of her own records, most hits on the U.S. Hot Country Songs chart by a female artist with a whopping 109 hits. The Guinness World Records presented Parton with her 3 new certificates in Nashville, and the Jolene songstress couldn't look prouder. This is the kind of stuff that really makes you very humble and very grateful for everything that's happened, she told the Guinness World Records. I had no idea that I would be in Guinness World Records this many times. I'm flattered and honored. I've had a lot of people help me get there. Thanks to all of you and all of them for helping me have all of this. Parton added, I've loved being able to make a living in the business that I love so much. I've been so fortunate to see my dreams come true, and I just hope to continue for as long as I can. You're going to have to knock me down to stop me. It's been an incredible year for the 9-to-5 crooner. She's earned her 50th Grammy nomination earlier this year. She also received her COVID-19 vaccine, which she helped fund after donating $1 million to Vanderbilt University Medical Center's Coronavirus Research Fund back in April 2020. And just last month, Parton's fans were ecstatic to find out that the National Treasures joining the 7th and final season of Grace and Frankie. Her appearance will give fans the 9-to-5 reunion they've been waiting on for years when she stars opposite Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda. Parton's also collaborating with best-selling author James Patterson for the upcoming novel Run, Rose, Run. The novel is due out in March 2022. Beethoven's Für Elise introduces our classical music news. It's entitled, Beethoven's Für Elise plays a surprising role in this upcoming superhero movie. This is written by Sophia Alexander Hall on the 4th of January, 2022, and published in ClassicFM.com. Enigmatic anti-hero Michael Morbius becomes the latest individual to enter the Sony Pictures universe of Marvel characters. But what does the music tell us about his upcoming film? The long-awaited upcoming 2022 film, Morbius, a Sony Pictures production in association with Marvel, tells the story of Dr. Michael Morbius, a biochemist who is searching for a cure for his rare blood disorder. However, when a dangerous cure infects Morbius with a form of vampirism, which gives him with pseudo-vampiric superhuman abilities and physical traits, a darkness inside him is unleashed. The first trailer for the film underscores these events to the soundtrack of one of classical music's most famous composers, Ludwig von Beethoven. But why this piece? And what significance could it hold? Composed in 1810 by Ludwig van Beethoven, Für Elise is undoubtedly one of the composer's most famous works. Its recognizable theme is a popular choice in films and TV shows, with series such as You on Netflix, and films such as The Gentlemen and Rosemary's Babies using the work. However, the Morbius trailer music is entirely based around the 200-year-old piano work and the arrangement, which includes strings, bass, glockenspiel, and dramatic percussion, adds an eerie and thrilling undertone to the less-than-3-minute-long teaser. What's the significance of Beethoven's piece? Well, you could argue that Sony Pictures' choice of trailer music could be down to the fact that Beethoven's famed work is in the public domain. However, some fans have argued that the choice of Für Elise is actually a reference to how the Morbius storyline will develop. Für Elise starts off as a beginner tune on the piano, with the tune mostly sticking to a melody which passes between both hands on the piano. However, in its entirety, the piece becomes much more complex, with a much faster right-hand line, and the need to move between chords quickly. Fans have associated this increasing difficulty with the plot of the upcoming film, suggesting that while Morbius's cure might have seemed simple at first, the effects get more difficult to handle as time goes on, similar to the way Feralise gets increasingly difficult to play. Fans were also quick to point out that at the beginning of the trailer, Jared Leto, who plays Morbius in the upcoming film, hums the opening line of Feralise, thus cementing the significance to the film beyond just the trailer music. Morbius is out in cinemas on 1 April 2022.
I love the colorful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up
The Beach Boys' Good Vibrations introduces our rock and pop music news. It's written by Grant Wong and published in Slate on the 3rd of January 2022, entitled, Brian Wilson Isn't the Type of Genius You Think He Is. The beloved Beach Boy is a musical legend, just not for the reasons everyone says. Rock history, whether it's written by music critics, fans, journalists, or scholars, often paints Brian Wilson, the oft-proclaimed creative leader behind the Beach Boys, as a solitary auteur whose personal vision utterly dominated the rest of the band. This belief dates all the way back to the late 60s when the slogan, Brian Wilson is a genius, first spread. It's persisted in collective memory ever since. A documentary released this past November, Brian Wilson, Long Promised Road, posits exactly that, dedicating its runtime to deifying Wilson as one of music's most singular artists. It ably details his personal struggles and self-perception, but deals uncritically in promoting this glorified understanding of his musicianship, and that view isn't entirely wrong. As the band's producer, foremost composer, and creative leader, Wilson's musical direction was the most prominent among the Beach Boys during the band's seminal period, from their inception in 1961 to 1967, the year their highly anticipated Smile album was scrapped. It's because of his musical talents and labor that we have the timeless tracks of Pet Sounds, the pocket symphony of Good Vibrations, and endless anthems to summer fun and teenage love, songs that soundtrack the youth of an entire generation of Americans. But the film also does the work to re-promote this idea that Wilson is the Beach Boys, that it was his musical prowess alone that made the band what it was. It's true that the Beach Boys would have been nothing without Brian Wilson, but the inverse is also true. Wilson needed the Beach Boys just as much as they needed him. His real genius lying in his ability to collaborate with others to compose music that was greater than the sum of its parts. Wilson's skills lay in synthesizing their talents to create music that was at once experimental and commercial, personal and relatable, timely and timeless. The Beach Boys were always a vocal group at heart, a rock and roll choir, The very core of their music was built upon complex harmonies that required a great deal of coordination and mutual understanding. Brian Wilson's falsetto was but one part of the band's vocal blend. Every member was needed to unlock the potential of their collective sound. They were also far from passive acolytes of Wilson's vision.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you.
If Pet Sounds and Smile truly were the predominantly solo efforts that they are often portrayed as, it would be difficult to understand why Brian Wilson gave Carl Wilson the lead vocal on God Only Knows, the song playing in the background now, and Mike Love the prominent chorus on Good Vibrations, the song which opened this article. Wilson's solo career, including his most recent release, 2021's At My Piano, is successful because of Wilson's talent and perseverance, but it remains inseparable from the legacy of the Beach Boys. I'm not a genius, I'm just a hard-working guy, remarked Wilson in 1964. Even as he was heading toward pop ascendancy, he still thought of himself as just another laborer in the music business, as just another Beach Boy. He was wrong. He was a genius team player. Perhaps the greatest irony and strongest proof of this truth is that the title of the documentary doesn't even refer to a Brian Wilson song. Long Promised Road was written and performed by his brother, Carl, without Brian's involvement. Earth, Wind, and Fire, September, introduces our local music news. It's entitled, UMC Children's Hospital's Dancing Doctors Make Viral Video. This is written by Josh Schaefer, published in the News and Observer on the 5th of January, 2022. Chapel Hill. Dr. Stuart Gold celebrated the end of a pandemic-scarred 2020 by pulling on a gold lamé jacket, slipping into a pair of sparkling dance shoes, and leading a team of pediatricians in a group boogie through the halls of UNC Children's Hospital. Now, at the close of an even harder 2021, the dancing doctors are back, this time featuring Gold in a burgundy evening jacket and a foot-long green ponytail sculpted into an exclamation point. It was supposed to be a mohawk, joked Gold. I've never done that before. No rehearsal needed. The Children's Hospital crew filmed what is fast becoming a viral video tradition over 4 hours on a Saturday when most of the clinics had closed. No rehearsal, Gold said. We're good. The dance winds through the exam rooms with all dancers masked and vaccinated. The arm rolls, jazz hand gestures, and spins, choreographed by Dr. Kenya McNeil Trice and her daughters. COVID hurt the world. set to Earth, Wind, and Fire, September, the song playing in the background now. The video follows Gold's transformations from daydreaming at his desk to spinning on his behind in a sort of medical breakdance. The doctors needed a release and some recognition after a second year of pandemic, this one complicated by a pair of variants that made medical care even tougher to deliver. "I think COVID hurt the world," Gold said. "We expected it to be better this year. It wasn't. But once sore shoulders and bruised calves heal, expect the UNC stylist to return for a third performance, hopefully on the heels of better news. We're thinking of an aquatic scene, like Esther Williams," Gold said. "I'm getting a personal trainer right now." So boogie on, doctors, and thank you again for all of your good work. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1970 that farmer Max Yasger was sued for $35,000 by his neighboring farmers for what? Was it A, for growing marijuana for distribution at concerts? Was it B, damages caused by a music festival held on his property? Or was it C, noise pollution from his loud music during the milking of his dairy cows? Or was it D, flooding caused by improper drainage from the huge piles of discarded musical instruments he amassed on his property? Correct answer. Answer B, Max Yasger was sued for $35,000 by his farming neighbors because of the damages due to the Woodstock Festival held on his property in August of 1969. As noted in the 814.19time.com article by Ray Kavanaugh, he may not have been as hip as Jimi Hendrix, but Max Yasger played as important a role in the original Woodstock. Dairy farmer Yasger, who was then approaching age 50, agreed to lease some of his land to festival organizers after the organizers had been denied, at the last minute, access to an industrial site. Yasger's reasons were both monetary and idealistic. He was paid a reported $75,000 for the use of 600 acres of his land. However, he was also something of an iconoclast, a pro-Vietnam War political conservative who firmly believed in the right of free expression, even if the expression came from people whose lifestyles and beliefs were very different from his own. He once remarked to the New York Times that, "If the generation gap is to be closed, we older people have to do more than we have done." The farmer's decision to accommodate a vast gathering of hippies was less than popular in his community. Some gave him the cold shoulder, while others threatened him with arson, boycott of his dairy products, and physical attack. Though not everyone in Yasger's town was anti-Woodstock, there were many who had no interest in closing any kind of generation gap. Some residents began displaying signs that said, "Don't buy Yasger's milk. He loves hippies." Appearing on stage during Woodstock's second day, Yasger received a hearty response when he addressed the crowd, which was much larger than he had expected. The same could be said for his neighbors, who had dreaded the idea of some 50,000 concertgoers rocking out in their backyard. Instead, nearly 500,000 attended, and this festival, which had struggled to find a host, would prove the defining counterculture event of the 1960s, with Yasger himself enshrined in songs like Joni Mitchell's 1970 Woodstock. For alleged damages caused by the festival attendees, some neighbors sought legal restitution and sued Yasger, charging that large numbers of concertgoers used their property as a site of shelter and defecation, and left their properties strewn with refuse. Indeed, the festival had been largely lacking in sanitary facilities. This deficiency, combined with heavy rains and a spirit of chaos, had filled the generation gap with a rancid mess. Eventually, some in the community decided to hold a dinner event in his honor, just to show him that not everyone had turned on him. All the negative sentiment had taken an emotional toll, however. Until the end of his life, Yasgur avoided discussion about the treatment he'd received from anti-Woodstock neighbors. He sold his farm in 1971, relocated to Florida, where he died of a heart attack in 1973. Rolling Stone then paid tribute to him with a full-page obituary, a rare gesture for a non-musician. Indeed, Yasgur was neither a guitar god nor a charismatic frontman. He was a farmer, but one with enough land and maverick moxie to let a young generation define itself. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day in 1993 that an Elvis Presley commemorative stamp was debuted by the U.S. Postal Service. The 29-cent stamp showed what? Correct answer, answer A, a likeness of 1950s-era Elvis. As noted in FantasticFacts.net, in 93, the U.S. Postal Service issued a commemorative postage stamp honoring Elvis Presley's 58th birthday. Fans mailed envelopes with first-day issues of the stamp to fictitious addresses so that they would receive their letters back marked with the words, Return to Sender, a 1962 song title by Elvis. In the USPS balloting, the young Elvis received three times as many votes as the old Elvis of the 1.25 million ballots cast. So let's close out today's program with one of those performers on Max Yasgur's farm at Woodstock, Santana, with a sort of welcome song to the new year, Oye, ¿cómo va?, which means, hey, how's it going? Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1777. 5-5. So long, until next time. And hey, how's it going so far?